Okay, we're delighted to have our first speaker, Sunday Papers Live. It is Danny Dorling in the culture section. Danny is a professor of geography at St. Peter's College, Oxford. His book, Shattered Nation, is a portrait of the UK in crisis, but also a glimmer of hope about how geography can show the way through. So could we please give a very warm Sunday Papers welcome to Danny Dorling.
Good afternoon. I'm not quite sure what you're doing, signing up at least for a talk about how terrible everything is on a Sunday afternoon in London. You only got me for about 25 minutes. I thought, how depressing can I get you? And you know, where do I start? Who can start with the children? And you know, that's the most tear-jerking. I'm going to start with old people, health service, life expectancy, or we could go in the middle and we could talk about events in Zone 1 and Zone 2, just to make it really bad, and we can talk about our wonderful Prime Minister, or our wonderful leader of the opposition. But I thought I'd wake you up with some hope. I'm a geography lecturer, so you're going to get some geography. Hope. How do you find hope? Well, what you do if you're a geographer is you have a little look around and you try and find somewhere where people have worked out how to deal with some of the problems that we have. So let's take that problem of children. 56% of children with mother and sister are now going hungry several times a month. The heights of our children are falling since 2005. And they matter, by the way, just in case you thought it was all wonderful before 2010. And mortality rates are rising. 1 to 4 year olds are more likely to die this year than they were the year before. That. So we have a problem with children. We have a problem with child poverty. We have a problem with children going hungry. We have a problem with children going cold. There is one country which has reduced child poverty the fastest in the last 3 years through a series of relatively simple policies. And there are a few hundred of you in the room, and if you're clever, you'll know there's only 30 old countries in Europe, okay? And I'm going to give you 10 guesses. Right. Now, if you manage to get this in 10, you would have beaten Wood Green Labour Party last week. No, you didn't. You would have beaten the students at the University of Nottingham. I won't say where else I've done this. At some point, I'm going to have to stop doing this because people are going to learn. Right, which country in Europe in the last 3 years has achieved the biggest reduction in child poverty? Who wants to put your hand up? You. Sweden. No, it's flat in Sweden. Don't be low, they're doing very well, but it's flat in Sweden. Go on. Finland. Finland is lovely, my favourite country. I wrote a book with Anita Kongjoen on Finland. Anita is only 22 years old because Finns are very capable, best education system in the world, happiest people. But no, because they already had child poverty very low, and they haven't actually reduced it. So we've had Sweden and Finland at the back. Poland. It's a good one. Poland's actually had a pretty big reduction in the last 10 years in child poverty. Quite a lot of Eastern Europe has, but Poland in the last 3 years hasn't achieved something remarkable. But in terms of uplifting, you know, people always talk about the far right rising. Like all my life, Poland's just had an election where the far right have had one of their biggest defeats. But sadly not Poland. So we've had Sweden, Finland and Poland. That's right over here. You over there. Lala? Romania. Oh, that is good. No. But Romania's doing better. It's quite close There are only five countries in Eastern Europe which have worse neonatal mortality than the UK, and one of those five is Romania. I give it about 15 years, Romania will be doing better than the UK for the chance of not dying in the first 4 weeks of life. You, sir. Shout. Luxembourg. Oh, again, okay, very good. You realise there are lots of small countries in Europe. No. Luxembourg is really odd because it's very, very rich, works as a tax haven, and quite a lot of people who live in Luxembourg don't work here and vice versa. So the statistics, I'm bore you, by the way, on this. But no, quite low child poverty in Luxembourg, not because they're brilliant, there's lots of money. Amazon. You ever read Hold the Bill? Anyway. Lithuania. No, I'm losing count. We've got five or six, haven't we? Bulgaria. Oh, that's good. Sorry. Bulgaria is the only country in Europe which is more unequal than us. But only just has a higher income inequality. Their stats are around 3 or 4 years old. So my guess is we might have beaten them. But I think currently the UK may be the most unequal state in all of Europe. And then Bulgaria has a price for that, sir. Chat? Vatican City. I'm not going to talk about how children there in the Vatican City. I did notice earlier on they were carrying a cross and making jokes about crucifixes. Anyway, we are in what was a church, but no, it's the Vatican City. Yes. Czech Republic are doing very well, but not a sudden improvement. We must have about eight. Two more guesses.
Ireland.
Ireland. Getting closer, but no, and you. Is it the Netherlands? It's flat, the Netherlands are doing okay. Okay, you haven't beaten them. That is at least 10 guesses, isn't it? Right, the country in Europe with the biggest fall in child poverty in the last 3 years. The country that we could learn from, this weird, exotic place, which you might say has a different culture, and we could never do this. The country is Scotland. Yeah. And because you're living so far, far away from Scotland, nobody tells you what's happened in Scotland. So, I'm going to uplift you. A few minutes of time, because you might want to know, what on earth is Scotland? It's not that hard. Lots of the solutions we need, being in the most terrible state we've been in since the 1930s, are relatively easy. But what you have to know is that some people really don't want these solutions to happen. Because some people believe that if you're hungry, you're more likely to take a second or third job. And we need people to work. And even more effectively than if you're hungry, if your children are hungry, you will behave. Not many, but there are psychopaths out there. So what do the Scots do? It's the story of Nicola Sturgeon, a woman of about my age, grew up in the normal part of Glasgow, like Wham, when she was young. And she wanted two things. One was Scottish independence, which she hasn't got yet. And the other was to reduce child poverty, because she's normal. Unlike many of our politicians. Just to bait you, because I will open the mic after this for questions. Some of you may remember that the Labour government took 1 million children out of poverty. They managed to do that without reducing inequality by one iota. And you might think, how on earth could Labour have taken 1 million children out of poverty and not made anything better? Poverty is a line. We have a poverty line. If you move children just over that line, just underneath to just over, officially they're out of poverty. It's just that they don't notice and they don't get any taller. Right? What does Scotland do? Scotland had its own COVID committee, a crisis committee during the pandemic, which met every week to try and deal with that. When the cost of living crisis began, the SNP, I'm not an advocate for them, but the SNP convened, as the Scottish government, a crisis committee that met about every week to try to work out how to deal with the cost of living crisis, because it was as deadly and is as deadly as COVID, in what the effects will be on people and life expectancy. This is what happens if you have austerity and increased poverty, which is what occurs if food prices rise by 16%. What they did is introduce a special Scottish child payment. They first of all introduced it about 3 years ago, but just £10 a week for children under the age of six, if your family was claiming benefits. And then they increased it and increased it. And by November 2022, the Scottish child payment was £25 a week for every child in your family under 16, for any family in receipt of any form of benefit in Scotland. That's 2 out of 7 of all children. If you are a family of 3 in Scotland, that's £4,000 extra a year. It goes directly to the parents, almost always to the mother, like child benefit. So remember, in Scotland, you still get child benefit if you have 3 children or 4 children. We don't try to penalise you and make you poor for having more siblings. A child in Scotland now, with a brother and a sister, will be living in a family with £4,000 more a year because of that payment than a child in England. £4,000 is enough to make sure that your children do not go hungry and they don't go cold. So what do we report? We report about a camper van. We report that there was a camper van, and you can't quite explain who bought or owned the camper van. We don't talk about what Scotland have done because we don't like it. I didn't introduce myself. The liberal elite who run this country. I'm a professor at the University of Oxford. And we don't like it. However, to raise the optimism, there was a little battle last summer. Gordon Brown wrote an article in The Scotsman saying that he thought the Scottish child payment was inefficient because it should be being enacted by the Department for Work and Pensions. The Scottish Labour Party told him to shut up. So, one reason you don't hear about the Scottish child payment is that there was a quiet agreement between Labour and the SNP in Scotland that this is undebatable, untouchable, and simply will happen. They fund it by a slightly higher rate of income tax and by not spending things on other people in society. They can't help the old, but they can make sure that children are not going to grow up stunted. There is so much that is possible. They also change the rules on eviction so that you can't simply be evicted from private tenancy, again because of the cost of living prices. And this is inside the UK. You know, that's what's remarkable. This isn't taking some Nordic utopia and saying, oh, can't we all get together and be sensible, be like that. This is inside the UK right now. And it's not just inside the UK, it is the policy of the Labour Party in Scotland. Not the Labour Party down here, but the Labour Party in Scotland. It's untapered, which means that it's not reduced because you get some other kind of benefit. You get the cash regardless if you get any benefit. It's as simple as that. At some point I'm going to stop shouting on about it. But it just annoys me that we say how difficult things are and don't even look inside the UK to see what people who care a little bit more are doing. Have I got a minute for questions? Are you checking the time? I've got 10 minutes, okay. Who wants to ask a question about anything at all? Elephants in the room. The mic is over here, so anybody there? You might disagree with me, you might say this is terrible. Scotland's going to become really inefficient. They're not going to work hard. Can you hand the mic over?
Yes, I will. The front. Precariously jobbed a person in my
family. Well, I should say while you're bringing the mic over, there is a book. The book is called Chatter Nation. It's at the cafe.
So I'm in an awkward position where I'm going to sponsor.
This is great. And I want the next person to be in a really awkward place because I'm going to enjoy watching you fly me over the audience. Go ahead.
Review a Prime Minister
for
writing a manifesto.
What would I put in a manifesto? It's interesting to look. Manifesto is 25,000 words long. I played this. One of the best was done by a young man called Michael Young in 1945. He was very young when he did it. My second favourite was done by a young man called Andrew Fisher in 2017. The trick is having your manifesto leaked so that nobody mucks around with it. What I would do is say that it would make sense within 5 years for this country to increase its public spending to the level of Germany. Not as high as France or as high as Finland, Germany's even the average for the EU. Plan to increase within 5 years, not revolution, not within 2 months, 5 years to the German level of public spending. Then you can actually repair the roofs of the schools, you can fund the health service, that's all you need to do. And it might sound quite reasonable to you, say we're going to be like Germany. We often get geographical comparisons wrong, because we look at other countries, if they label a politician as conservative, we think they must be bad. Sorry, you can see my bias. But my favourite politician in Europe is Angela Merkel, Christian Democrat Conservative of Germany, let in 1.5 million war refugees, okay, reduced the inequality of Germany so that only four countries separated from Finland. France is similar. We have a Nordic Northern Europe now. So that's what I do, and a whole lot of other things, but essentially it's a 2017 manifesto. The problem with the 2017 Labour Manifesto is it didn't put in big letters at the front. All this is us trying to be a bit like Germany, right? So it was called madness. But if we had done it, then we would be in a very different situation to where we are now. It was popular. The swing in the vote between 2015 and 2017 was the fastest, biggest swing to the Labour Party that has ever occurred. Four times faster than the swing per year to 1945. Right? Good things are entirely possible. They occasionally happen, as they've happened in Scotland. They occasionally happen, as they've happened across the whole of Northern Europe. There are five countries in Europe now more equitable than the Nordic five, more equitable than Iceland, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, and Norway. And five that are practically as equal, which includes France and Germany. Right? They don't wear school uniform in Europe. All kinds of things. Right? How could you run a school without school uniform? What would happen? Right? That's why I'm a geographer. My geographer's lovely because you just go, oh look, just come over there. And that thing you say is completely impossible here seems to be working over there. Or you could just go and look at a bit of history. I grew up in the 1960s and 70s. 1974, we were the second most equal large country in Europe to Sweden. So we were Nordic in my lifetime. I haven't gone on about how terrible things are because I don't want to set you off on a bad mood today. But things are possible. We have to fight for them. Now, who's going to make your life hard? Who wants to ask another question if we're allowed? Or somebody's being kind, okay.
I think we've got one that's behind you.
Right.
You can do panto about it, anyone?
Hello.
Is there any hope to be done from Brexit?
Hope from Brexit, yeah.
Provocateurly.
I was standing behind you as you were walking in. I'm very not sure it's you. It's your very confident making for somebody that's there speaking.
No,
also we are. Okay, yeah, now no, it is a message. Somebody said, it might be you. Okay, behind. Somebody said, who have you come for? And the person who looked like you said, oh, I haven't checked who's speaking. And I thought, that's okay, not so bad. What's good about Brexit? Lots and lots of things. I'm a Remainer, by the way, before you boo me. Because this is London, we're 80% Remain voting in this little part. If it had gone the other way, 52% voting Remain, 48% voting Leave, we would still be in a civil war. Remain, Dominic Cummings, Gove, their assumption was that they would lose the first referendum. They were all gearing up for the next fight, claiming that the BBC was biased the church has revised, the CEI was revised, the trade union was revised, because every civic organisation backed them out. Right, so there was a long campaign flat. That is why at least one of the Leave campaigns broke the law numerous times because they thought they'd never be investigated because they were going to lose. So at least they're not in that contracted situation. I'll give you one more reason why Brexit is good. If it hadn't been us, it would have been somebody else. Right, the EU is a democratic institution, you don't have to stay. If we hadn't left, possibly it would have been Greece. And we're richer. Right, Greece shares a land border with Bulgaria. Back then, nobody realised if you share a land border with anybody, no matter how tiny or insignificant you think it is, that's a big thing. Back then, people thought, well, you can leave the EU, and don't worry, the Pilchers are still going to arrive. I mentioned Pilchers because my dad lives in the West of Wales. He's in his 80s, the only thing he wants is Pilchers. Right, the cans no longer get to the co-op in Dalgetha. Seriously, we have serious supply problems, let alone how much we're paying for food. But if it hadn't been us, somebody else would have done it, it would have been bad for them. And also the far right parties of Europe. I told you that Finland's my favourite country, the three Finns, switched from being an anti-EU party to loving the EU because it made sense. And now they want more immigration, but from Spain. Okay? They're still nasty and far right. And the last good thing about Brexit, our Conservative Party left the Conservative Party grouping of Europe in 2014 and aligned itself with Alternative for Deutschland. At the time of Brexit, there were 40 far right MEPs in the European Parliament from the UK. A mixture of Conservatives and UKIP. But this was the European far-right bedrock. That was us. We don't think of ourselves as far-right. We're just normally British. And make people go on planes to Rwanda. They'll buy the world of National Front. And what National Front is campaigning for. And now we have it. There's policy. So when we left the EU, the European far-right lost its 40 MEPs. It lost its position of having all of Tufton Street in Europe. The Adam Smith Institute, all of the nasties. They're now on the edge. The Adam Smith Institute had to rely on its office in Warsaw because after we went, the European far-right headquarters was Poland. Poland had 20 far-right MEPs in the European Parliament, except the Poles have voted against that nasty government. So the European far-right, opposite to what you'll read in the Guardian and talks endlessly about, oh, look, they've just got in Portugal, which, okay, it's bad. The European far right has been damaged by us leaving the EU. It's like that Mitchell and Webb sketch, normally work out there in baddies, right? We were the baddies, we are the baddies in many ways. Elephants in the room, but if you look at our policy and say, who's being good and who's supporting really nasty things going on in the world? My very bad news is that we are generally on the side of wrong. Last thing I say, far right, you don't believe me. If you remember the years and years of Goldman Dawn rising in Greece and the fear of what's going to happen, some women judges essentially took them to court and prosecuted them in Greece and they've been collapsed. There were so many good news stories. The problem is you have to know about the bad news as well to realise why the good news matters. We're allowed another question?
I'm afraid not, Jamie. Ended on a positive high, though. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jamie, for coming. So, most of our authors today, if you're interested in their book, they are over by the snacks, by the coffee, by the pastries. Danny Dorling's book, Shattered Nation, is eviscerating and brilliant insight into the current state of the nation.